W250 CV Green Bay. And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is the
ABC News. I'm Andy Field. Authorities in New Mexico releasing body cam footage of Monday's shooting where a gunman opened fire on the streets of Farmington and killed three women at random. 18-year-old suspect shot and killed by police. Police Chief Steve Hebe.
It's emotional to watch it, honestly, and I've seen it a bunch of times now and talked about it even more. It's still emotional to watch it.
Still not certain what sparked the shooting. The Navy launched an investigation following suicides of three sailors from the USS George Washington in 1 week. From that investigation, the service recommending improvements in housing, food, internet, and mental health. Nima Momeni, the man charged with stabbing to death tech executive Bob Lee in San Francisco, has pled not guilty to a murder charge. District Attorney Brooke Jenkins.
The motion to detain him without bail was granted, and so we are very pleased with that, as we did, of course, have a significant public safety concern regarding the possibility of him being released.
This is ABC News. The Drug Enforcement Agency says nearly 664,000 pounds of medications were turned in during last month's National Prescription Drug Takeback Day. Norway says it will donate weapons to Ukraine to fight the Russian invasion. It'll include 8 long-range multiple-launch rocket systems and 3 Arthur artillery guidance radars. There could soon be more than just writers on the picket line.
This time it's the Actors Union, SAG-AFTRA, their board voting unanimously to take a strike authorization vote ahead of the start of contract talks in a couple of weeks with the studios, the same studios writers are currently striking against, and the same studios currently in contract talks with the Directors Guild. A strike authorization vote, if it passes, doesn't mean that the actors will go on strike, but it's a strong signal that they could. Voting started Thursday and ends June 5th. Contract talks start on the 7th with a June 30th deadline to get a deal. Jason Athenson, ABC News.
Total bill for Queen Elizabeth II's funeral last September was about $200 million. That is according to UK government figures. Andy Field, ABC News.
Thanks for listening to your local Civic Media radio station. Learn more on our website, civicmedia.us.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Here's what you need to know. Hazy skies today are due to smoke from Canadian wildfires. The National Weather Service says the worst of it is in the north. Meanwhile, the smoke is making for some colorful sunsets. Proposed changes to Wisconsin's shared revenue system just got better for most local communities. The latest version of the bill passed the Assembly last night. It increases their boost from 10% to 15%. But Democrats like Greta Neubauer say it's not ready for prime time.
It's not the solution to our challenges that people in Wisconsin deserve. And to some, it might be a fiscal band-aid, but it comes with unnecessary and damaging strings attached.
Now, Senate Republican leaders say they'll take out a requirement that Milwaukee and Milwaukee County hold referendums to raise local sales taxes. In sports, the Cardinals beat the Brewers last night 3-0. I'm Terry Bell, and this is Civic Media News.
The Talk of Green Bay, 1590 AM and 97.9 FM WGBW programming is broadcast from the Bug Tussle Studios. Bug Tussle, keeping you connected to the world around you.
This is the story of a very special woman. Just a few knew about her superpowers. In a matter of seconds, she turned herself into a great mathematician. She masqueraded as a regular person at work, but as a superhero at home. Everyone knows her as Gabriella. I still call her Mom.
Your hero needs you now. And AARP is here to help. Find the care guides you need to help, complete with tips and resources, at aarp.org/caregiving. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Talking to your kids about the dangers of vaping can be hard. Getting them to listen to hot gossip is easy. So here's some drama you could share with your kid. Dude, did you hear about Cassie and Jake? No, but did you hear that vaping can cause irreversible lung damage and nicotine affects brain development? Nuh-uh. You don't need to gossip if you want to have an open conversation about vaping. So if you want to get tips on when and how to talk to your kids, visit talkaboutvaping.org. Brought to you by the American Lung Association and the Ad Council.
You know him as the nose tackle for the green and gold.
1993 to 1999, and again 2001 to 2003.
125 games, 292 tackles, 7 sacks, and a Super Bowl ring. But there's more to life than stats, and there's more to life than football.
You're about to find out.
Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger, featuring Packers legend Gilbert Brown.
Monday mornings at 8 on WISS and WGBW and on the Civic Media app.
Hi, we're the Goo Goo Dolls. We're fortunate that our daughters have what they need to grow and learn. But that isn't the case for nearly 13 million kids in the U.S. that struggle with hunger.
Childhood hunger is a heartbreaking reality that Feeding America is working to change. Each year, the Feeding America network of food banks rescues billions of pounds of good food that would have gone to waste and provides it to families and children in need.
You can help kids in need in your community by visiting feedingamerica.org.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Ready for our little forest adventure?
Yes!
So much waiting for me. Yeah, I want to go outside. I want to be.
We're here.
Whoa, that was fast.
There's a forest closer than you think. Find a park or forest near you and music inspired by nature at discovertheforest.org. Brought to you by USDA Forest Service and the Ad Council.
Looking for more local programming? Check out our website, civicmedia.us, to see our entire lineup.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here. Today on the big program, lots to get to. Lots to talk about. Kind of an interesting day in D.C. One of these days where you go, somebody needs a hug. I mean, this is where my mind went. Someone needs a hug. Marjorie Three Names acting out again. And I just thought, you know, I wonder if she was hugged as a child, because I keep coming back to you. I know she loves to be the center of attention. I know she needs to be the center of attention. But today she has come out and said articles of impeachment. Now, we knew they were coming. We knew that Republicans were going to do the we got your back, Donald. We knew they were eventually going to go after Biden. And good. It's about time. It's about time Republicans do what they've been saying. Now, she didn't actually do what she's saying, because it's not about actually doing. It's about, again, riling the base, getting everyone all tangled and bunched up in the panties. Yeah, it's about the daily outrage. So this, I got a lot of people, we're going to impeach Biden. Okay, go ahead. Go ahead. Seriously. Nothing else is going to get accomplished. I mean, they're in the process of trying to destroy the country by having us default. Why not? And I said from the beginning, let the Republicans be who they are. Democrats, stop trying to save the Republicans. It's interesting. And I don't think I talked very much about the whole George Santos thing. It's interesting how they're shielding him. Now, they need the vote, understand. They know they need the vote, but there's a moment at which you go, you know, we have scruples, we have morals, we have values. And remember, Republicans are supposed to be the values people. They wear it on their sleeves. They talk about how, you know, godly and religious they are, yet, wow. Now, also, I mean, it wasn't bad enough that, you know, she went on this bizarre rant. And I got to tell you, it isn't even worth listening to be honest with you at this point. Show me the articles. I want to see them in writing. I want to see the research that you've done. And I think this is how the Republican leadership is playing it, too. Show us the legal reason, not just your opinion or your beliefs or you want to believe. Show us that stuff that you're going to take in front of a trial judge, in front of the Chief Justice, if it eventually gets to that. Because you have to know, yeah, you got to convict. You got to get it. So show me what it is that you're going to put in writing. I want to see the legal stuff. I don't want to hear opinions. I don't want to hear what you want to believe. It's like everything. I say this all the time. What are you willing to take into that room where that person is wearing the black dress, where they put the hand on that book that people seem to love so much and swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth. So help them God under the fear of, if you lie, you go to jail. I'm not seeing her do that. I wish, you know, if she does, then it's a story.
Also, wow, another one of these moments. The little victim, she plays the victim so well. She really missed her calling. Actress, that's where she should go. As I said, she needs a hug. Evidently very afraid, frightened of the large black man. A lot of the memes on social media are taking us back to the Emmett Till kind of scenario where, you know, he yelled at me and, or he, you know, he did something and I'm afraid for myself. Really? Anybody buying that out of Marjorie Three Names? No. Because remember, this is the woman that chased a child down the road and yelled at him and you know, chased him down. And for her to now say, you know, I'm worried for my... No, get out of here. Get out of here. Here's my problem. We're in this spot. Country's in really a moment of division. And someone like Marjorie Three Names knows this. So they're going to throw out this red meat because they know it's going to get everyone all tizzied up. Because there's part of me that thinks that the negotiations that are going on, and look, I'm not thrilled with the reports that the Biden appointees, the aides that they put are actually going to bring some concessions to the table. I think the debt ceiling's an idiotic thing. That's not where you fight this stuff. But the reports, that's happening. And there's a report that maybe McCarthy's going to cave. So there's part of me that goes, she needs to get everybody all tizzied up and angry. And, you know, maybe at McCarthy, there's part of me that goes, if McCarthy doesn't allow her to go insane as she is, all you need is one person to oust him. I mean, this isn't about governing. This is about, hey, look at me. This is about getting attention. Can you imagine a Speaker Green? Wow. Now, here's the thing, and this is what bothers me. We're days away from a potential default. Hasn't happened in, a couple hundred years? We're days away from our economy. What economists are telling me could be, you know, upwards of 8 million jobs lost. Could be massive hits to your, I know people are concerned about their 401ks, could be massive hits to that like we've never seen in our lifetimes anyway. Could be a blow to our standing in the world as the reserve currency, because for the first time we're not going to pay our bills. And all it takes, and this is the part that just blows my mind, all it takes is five Republicans, just five, to say, yeah, we're not going to do this. Just five. Just five to say, hey, we want to make sure that we're sane. Just five. And this is the thing that gets me. You're talking about just five Republicans. That's it. Who could say, no, we're not going to slash funding for veterans. We're not going to slash funding for seniors and for food programs. Because understand, this is the part that's the most frustrating to me. None of them are talking about raising taxes on people who are well-fed, well-heeled, well-cared for. The people who need it the least, they give the most. The people who need it the most seem to be getting the least. It seems, I don't know, for the folks who believe in that, who want the book, or tell me how much they love the book, I don't know that they've actually read it. And it's the problem I have. Look, I grew up in Catholic school. I grew up in an era of the Catholic Church being about peace and social justice, about loving thy neighbor and helping to feed the hungry and clothe the naked and care for the sick and do those things. So I grew up with that as my core belief structure. And yet, not so much. Not so much from our patriotic religious GOP. And that's frustrating. Now, we've got all this stuff going on, and it's great distraction. It's good outrage. We're fearing the economy is going to take a collapse. But for me, I got to be honest, the story that caught my attention, you remember the bridge in Pittsburgh that collapsed, the Fern Hollow Bridge collapsed, a couple cars went down in the drink. There was some Biden was coming there like the next day. It was kind of a big story. Well, the NTSB came out with their report, and guess what? Ain't good. They're saying that nationwide, that thing that happened in Pittsburgh, the fact that you have these steel bridges with exposed, you know, supports and legs, that water, you know, has eroded, you know, created, you know, rust and all kinds of things that help weaken them. Evidently, they're saying that could happen 10,000 times across the country. There are 10,000 bridges across the country with similar construction and the same kind of corrosion. And look, here's the thing. That Fern Hollow Bridge, they had done inspections on. They had noted that this could happen. They had said, hey, by the way, we should maybe do something about this. And it got me thinking today, you know, back in 2012, my state here in Pennsylvania where I live, they passed a resolution saying that 2012 was going to be the official year of the Bible. And look, I'm not against the year of the Bible. Why not? And I said, the good thing about it being the year of the Bible is maybe we're going to pray more because we're going to have to, that we pray to get from one side of the bridge to the other without ending up in the down below. And we haven't done much since then. And it's one of these things where my mind went to, you know, we got Republicans shooting kids through doors because some kid rang the doorbell. I'm worried about getting across the bridge. For my Republican friends who cling to their AR-15s, they are not going to save you when the bridge collapses. They make terrible flotation devices. But the idea that this got almost no attention because the people who didn't get hugs as children are throwing temper tantrums in public. This is the stuff we should be talking about. How do we rebuild our infrastructure? And we've got a guy who's doing it. Got a bill passed. Doing the work. This is Infrastructure Week. We're actually building infrastructure in Infrastructure Week. You figure it out. Let's quick go to the phones. Got Kurt on line one from Akron. Kurt, how are you? What's on your mind?
Hey, good morning, or good afternoon, or good evening, Rick. So anyway, Marjorie Traitor, no longer green. Right?
No longer green. I don't know that she's actually changed her name yet.
Right, but she is divorced.
She is divorced. And look, Lauren Boebert's going that way, too. So, you know, the crazy duo, maybe they're going to hook up together.
QAnon Betty and Veronica, I tell you. Where one goes, the other goes. But, you know, she better be worried not only about going to jail, but if she claims to be the good Christian woman she is, she better be worried about going to hell for the lies that she's talking about.
Ouch.
Yeah. And then as far as infrastructure decade, remember, folks, that infrastructure bill, very few Republicans voted for that. And I believe that was the bipartisan one.
Yeah, there were a handful of people who voted for it.
And you're going to see all these Republicans like Three Toes and Lauren Boebert next year talking about all the wonderful things they brought to their communities with that infrastructure bill, and they didn't vote one time for any of that for your improvement. The next thing, I lost my train of thought. Oh, I know what it was. George Santos and Kevin McCarthy tabling the expulsion of George Santos until he gets the votes to destroy this country in June. Refresh me if I'm wrong, or correct me if I'm wrong, but do you remember back in July of 2002, James Traficant, who was just across the border from where you are, was a congressman from Youngstown, Ohio?
Yep.
And he got indicted, I believe, for making his staff work on his farm, and I think he also had some racketeering going on.
Yeah, he had a whole bunch of stuff going on.
Right. But if you remember, he was expelled on July 24th, 2002, before he went to prison, with a vote of 433-1, because he didn't vote. Do you remember who that congressman was who voted to keep him in Congress?
I don't. Who was it?
Gary Condit of
no
California,
way.
Who was going through the Chandra Levy garbage at that time.
Now, I remember that.
So I mean, it just seems like our values have really changed in the last 21 years, haven't they?
Oh, absolutely, without question. And look, I, you know, You could have said, you know, Al Franken shouldn't have resigned when he did. Some people are saying,
Oh heck no.
You know, this is the. Do you have values? Do you believe in the system? Do you believe in that, or don't you? And our Republican friends, it's all about power. You know, I've been saying that from the beginning. It's about power.
Exactly. And then get this. You were talking about your church going days when you were a kid, right?
Yep.
I remember in 94, I remember going to church and hearing the sermons and the homilies saying, love thy neighbor on Sunday. But then on November the 8th, everyone went and voted for Newt Gingrich and Bob Dole and the Republican contract on America. I was really upset with my fellow congregants for voting for that. And I even told my mom and dad, I said, please do not make me go to church. I do not want to go to Sunday school. I need to get through this because the American people deserve exactly what they get. And I can't be around a bunch of hypocrites right now. So they let me do it. They let me have my little wine fest. But by Easter, I finally came around to, I will go to church, you know, because mom and dad would probably say, you need to go to church. It's Easter, blah, blah, blah. I agreed to do it, but I said, I will do it on one condition. We sit on the far left side of the sanctuary, and I get to sit on the far left side of the pew. So what I was doing is I was doing my own little peaceful protest without being obnoxious.
All right. There you go. Good stuff, Kurt. I appreciate it, man.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thanks so much. Okay. No, look, I've always said the left made a huge mistake by leaving the church, ceding that to the far right, ceding sanity in the church to the crazy people. That was a huge mistake, I think. Tactically, not a great thing. I want to hear your thoughts, though. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Take a quick break. Right back after this, the crown.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So the AP is reporting that confidence in our Supreme Court, lowest in at least 50 years. Gee, you think? And what's interesting is I had a bunch of conservatives yesterday reach out to me and complain that I was too hard on Clarence Thomas, that somehow they're okay with him taking $500,000 vacations on some billionaire's yacht, that they're okay with some billionaire paying his grandnephew or whatever he is, his tuition, or buying his mother's house and doing renovations, or, you know, giving his wife, you know, huge amounts of money. They were okay with that. My mind went, imagine if Sonia Sotomayor or Ketanji Brown Jackson or any of them had any of this stuff. And I just threw back, I go, look, at the end of the day, if you or me or any working stiff did that on a form, lied on a form, a government form under penalty of perjury, you know, we'd be in a tin can. We'd be paying the price. And look, I went through a whole bunch of cases of why I have a problem with the Roberts Court. And for me, these were valid arguments. None of the conservatives wanted to argue the actual cases. They just believed that they were right, which is weird. Now, I got an email from a guy listening on our podcast. He said, Rick, listen into your podcast and heard you rattling off Supreme Court cases, made my head hurt. Too much information, he says, of all of the cases you talked about. Which one is the worst, in your opinion? Also, you said everyone is forced to sign arbitration agreements. I'm 35 and I've never seen one or been confronted by anyone demanding I signed one. Where are they? I don't, that's a 35 and have never seen one of these. I got some questions for you. They're in virtually everything that you do. Now, I guess the question is what is a forced arbitration agreement? What is one of these forced arbitration clauses? It's basically a contractual agreement that, you know, parties, you and whoever else, you're going to resolve any problems you have through an arbitrator. An arbitrator that's, you know, dependent on making money other than our court system. And if you sign one of these things, you are legally required to go to this arbitrator. There is no court for you to go to. All decisions are final. So there's no appeals. There's none of this stuff. You get one bite at the apple. And here's the other part. And this is why I find them so bad. There have been studies on these arbitrations. And what they find is arbitrators are ruling for the entity over the individual in huge numbers. Why? One, because, well, the entity has the ability to help choose who the arbitrator is going to be. So if your bread has the butter on one side, which side are you going to, you know where you're going. But more importantly, these big companies or these entities that demand these things have attorneys, where individuals generally don't, because most individuals just believe they're right. They believe in right and wrong. They believe that, you know, I was wronged and this someone's going to agree when they hear my story. And the reality is it's not always work out that way. And the thing is you find these forced arbitration clauses in, you name it, virtually every terms of service contract you'll ever sign, your cell phone, rental cars, all those small print things online when you go, hey, I got this app. Or any of this, anything that you sped through and didn't bother, bother reading all of the little tiny stuff. That's where these things are found. And as I said, you know, it's concerning to me that at 35, you've never read the fine print where this stuff is there. And I guess they know we're never going to read it. They put it in so much legalese and jargon that it's difficult to get through. But rest assured, it's there. And the thing is, they tell you, you know, arbitrations, you know, it's good for you. It's in your best interest. It's more efficient. It's more cost effective. And it is more efficient. Honestly, it is much more efficient and much, much more cost effective for them. Because as I said, the game is generally rigged. And more often than not, as I said, you don't have an attorney. They've got teams of them. And I go back to this. If it was good for you, they wouldn't do it. And that's where my frustration is in this. If it were something that were really good for you, that was really going to help you or me or any other working person, no. This stuff is heavily weighted toward big moneyed interests. This is most certainly the moneyed interest versus the rest of us. And as I talked about yesterday, when my aunt... You know, she worked for a company 20 years. And because of this Supreme Court, her employer was able to walk in into her office, slap down one of these things, said, sign it or pack your stuff and get out. That, again, we're supposed to have choice, remember? You could choose to enter into an agreement. What happened to that choice? It's the same thing with your cell phone. You say, look, I don't want to sign into this cell phone. Oh, well, you can't get the cell phone then. And every carrier has them. So what choice do you have? You have no choice. And in this vein, you don't even have the illusion of choice. You don't even have the idea to believe that I'm better than this. The only thing you can do is what I did when confronted with it in the doctor's office. Not sign it and not get the service. Go somewhere else. But what happens when there is nowhere else to go? And this is what the Supreme Court, thanks John Roberts Court, has done to working people and consumers. They've screwed us over. And that should anger us. All the other stuff aside, they're screwing us over. And we need to know it. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Quick break. Right back. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1933. That was the day President Franklin Delano Roosevelt signed the Tennessee Valley Authority Act. The act created the TVA as a federal corporation and was tasked to address the resource development of the region, one of the poorest in the nation. These included flood control and improved travel along the Tennessee River. It also meant improved forestry to address soil erosion and facilitation of agricultural production. Control of water resources required a series of dams designed to navigate the river and reduce flooding. Though Wilson Dam had been completed before the establishment of the TVA, the authority had embarked on the construction of 16 more dams. During the Depression, the TVA hired tens of thousands of workers for conservation, construction, and development. Historian Eric Loomis notes that though the TVA was one of the region's largest employers of black workers, the authority also maintained rigid lines of segregation in its workforce. He adds that though 14 AFL unions eventually worked on dam construction, the agency initially refused to recognize unions. Workers would have to wait until 1940 to sign first contracts in the anti-union South. Today, the authority is most well known for its supply of electricity to nearby communities. It is the nation's largest public power company and serves about 80,000 square miles in the southeastern United States. TVA capacity to generate electric power includes some 29 hydroelectric dams, 11 coal-fired power plants, 3 nuclear plants, and several combustion turbine installations. It also has several solar and wind installations. The authority produces more than 130 billion kilowatt hours of electricity each year. The TVA played a critical role in transforming the South by constructing infrastructure necessary for modernization and industrialization.
Oftentimes, when you suspect you're being gouged by corporate price fixers, you are. Take the rat-a-tat-tat of today's price jumps at supermarkets and chain restaurants. They make you want to rush to the cash register before they raise prices again. No, no, cried the CEOs of food giants. It's not us. It's, quote, supply chain disruptions. Then corporate politicians and economists chime in with old platitudes about the invisible hand of supply and demand. And media know-nothings also pile on, blathering about ne'er-do-wells causing a labor shortage. But hogwash, your suspicions are right. It's plain old price-fixing by avaricious food monopolies. Top executives even brag about it when talking to their bankers and shareholders. McDonald's, for example, recently told investors that, quote, strategic menu price increases in the past 3 months had boosted profits by 63%. Big Mac CEO exulted, I'm really proud of how our system has executed pricing. Never mind that it's their customers being executed. Well, say free market proselytizers, just buy from a competitor. But in nearly all segments of today's food economy, a handful of giants control the market, with each one in on the fix. For example, Chipotle, a McDonald's rival, also jacked up prices in the same three-month period, manufacturing an 84% profit increase. Its CEO then gloated to Wall Streeters, I think we've demonstrated we do have pricing power. This is Jim Hightower saying, by the way, these same giants are also fattening their profits by ripping off their workers. The federal poverty level is now $25,000 a year, with fast food workers typically getting only $3,000 a year more than that bare minimum for a 40-hour week. But there's the gotcha. The profiteering executives hold each worker to about 26 hours a week, creating a sub-poverty labor force for this multi-billion dollar industry.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So the CEO of Dominion Voting Systems, he said, look, even though we got the massive settlement, the $787 million, was it? even though they got the huge settlement from Fox, probably not going to be enough to save the company. They're probably going to go belly up. They're going to ultimately, as he said, go to zero because, look, the damage to their reputation was just too severe. That there are other options and people are going in other places. And Republicans, you know, they're so, you know, it's a militancy thing because they still believe, you ask the average Trump supporter, still believes tons of fraud, tons of abuse, even though there's none to be found. They believe. And here to share some thoughts on, well, this and all the other top stories of the day, I've asked our good friend Sarah Burris to come talk with us. Sarah is a reporter over at Raw Story, rawstory.com, the website. Sarah, thanks for taking time for us.
Hello, happy Thursday.
So Dominion, belly up, you think? You think he's right?
It's really, I hope not. That's really sad. The whole point of the settlement, I think, or the whole point of their lawsuit, I feel like, is to at least get back the value of the company. If they're going to have to go belly up, then they should have got what the company was worth. And that's just really tragic. You know, basically, Fox News was allowed to destroy an entire company and lie to do it.
It is quite amazing that the party of big business, look what they've accomplished. Now, I got to get your thoughts. I've been waiting all day. Articles of impeachment.
Happy impeachment week.
It's going to be impeachment.
How many were there? It was like five or six. I forget.
And I don't even know. There's nothing official. They haven't filed anything, right?
I don't think so. I don't know that she knows how to file articles of impeachment. I don't know that anybody in her office knows how to do that. Maybe that's the problem, though, is it's taken her this many, you know, this long to figure it out.
Or to learn how to spell the word impeachment.
Yeah. And just like get her crayon and, you know.
No, I mean, I've been waiting for this, you know, since they took power. They've run on the fact that I've had many people tell me that they're going to impeach Joe Biden. And regardless of what, there's going to be no justification. You know, it's going to happen because this is a tit for tat scenario. It's not about good governance. It's not about holding people accountable. This is just about pure political payback. And that's it. Her rambling was all about, I think, the fact that she didn't get hugged enough as a kid and she needs her daily dose of attention. And this was it.
I think you're probably right. One of the things that also happened today is that Comer asked for a 90-day extension for his committee that has been investigating Biden and Hunter Biden and all of the money part of their whole conspiracy, Biden conspiracy thing. And the reason he asked for another 90 days is that they don't have anything. And they thought that they were like going to be able to announce, well, we have all of these LLCs and there's this money that's going to people and
they have bank accounts.
Yeah. And that none of it linked back to Joe Biden. None of it. I mean, so they need the 90 days to figure that out. At the same time, you have Jim Jordan had his weaponization hearing again today. And the FBI guys basically got completely destroyed because it turns out they're, totally in favor of using violence to overthrow the American government. And that's why they got fired. So it's just like, you know, everything that they're trying to do has been failing so badly that I feel like any time, you know, if Republicans want to impeach him, I think that is the perfect thing for Biden to grasp onto and be like, please come at me.
No, I think they have. I'm like, good, about time. I've been waiting for this. We need this. We need my next 6 months of show prep because the reality is it's going to be the carnival, the circus that you know they want to have. And at the end of it, it's just going to be just like Benghazi. We're going to have lots of show, lots of flash, lots of wasted money on hearings, lots of grandstanding, lots of, hey, look at me. I wasn't hugged as a child. And at the end of it, zip, zilch, nothing. Much like the Durham report. Lots of nice words, lots of interesting conspiracy, but No, hey, this is what we need to do. Nothing. Even the Mueller report had some ideas.
Yeah. Right? That's the thing with the whole Durham report, right? Is that we had, you know, a couple dozen convictions, or at the very least, a couple dozen indictments, and poor Durham didn't get anything out of that. So it's just, you know, they are failing in every possible way that they can. And so I think this is going to be great.
Yeah, I'm waiting for it. Also, we find out today that Marjorie, three names, she's afraid of a very large black man, which I'm looking at the social media. Emmett Till's name keeps popping up. Because like I look at Marjorie three names. She doesn't look like someone who scares easy. This victim card kind of, I don't know. It reeks of, and I never play the racism card, but it kind of reeks of it.
That is a really good point. I didn't even think about. I was ignoring her little BS rant because I saw the actual footage of their exchange, and I saw it from two different perspectives. One looking over her shoulder, and then one looking at the two of them. And at the end of it, she just like waves her hand at him, like, you know, go on with you, and then walks away. And so it's like, if you're scared, why would you do that? You know? Especially if you're surrounded by like a whole bunch of people.
Yeah. I mean, it's
right. I just,
he said mean cameras. Things to me. He didn't agree with me.
That's the thing, is he didn't even say mean things to her. He was being completely rational. And he was just like, dude, you know, so you got to stop watching Fox News. You got to do stuff that, you know, is going to help Americans. You got like all of this stuff. And I mean, it was the most rational thing ever. And if you're going to blow something out of proportion, I would go with, you know, the conversation with George Santos and AOC. That was at least a little bit more amusing, right?
Yeah. But here's the thing. It looks like, look, I saw this as one of those aggressive moves by her. And it looks like Republicans are getting much more aggressive. I look for instance, yesterday you had Louisiana Republican Representative Clay Higgins, who literally grabbed a protester and marched them out of the way and handed them off to the Capitol Police. And the Capitol Police took them away. Now there were no charges for this person. And there may be charges on the congressperson, on this Clay Higgins. But when have you ever seen that?
That is the weirdest thing I have ever seen. I'm curious what is going to come of that. I've been talking to Jake Burdett is his name. I've been talking with him because another friend of mine who's a civil rights lawyer was trying to help him, like, say, look, this really is legitimately assault. Here's what you need to do. You need to file a police report. You need to, you know, all of this stuff. And I saw the video of both sides of it again, where you see the end of it, where Clay Higgins is pushing him to the street. The whole first half of that is an exchange between him and Higgins, where Higgins is totally rational and normal, and they come to an agreement where he's like, okay, I'm going to stop asking questions for Paul Gosar because that was where it first began, and then I'll talk to you guys after. Well, then Lauren Boebert got up and he started asking, you know, shouting out questions to her, and so Higgins just lost it. It's like he really just snapped and like tries to pick this dude up and push him out to the street. And so first of all, I'm like, you're on the public sidewalk. If you're going to do a press conference as a member of Congress on the public sidewalk, you're going to have to realize that nuts are going to come up to you and say things.
Yeah.
And activists who are protesting across the street are going to come across the street and say things. If you want to be sheltered and not have questions yelled at you, you need to do it in the safety of the Capitol.
You need your safe space.
Yeah, you need your safe space.
Do you need your safe space, Clay? Now, what I found interesting is that the representative, when asked by HuffPost, you know, what was going on, he said he felt threatened. This person was appearing, I guess, threatening. And I'm going, wait a second. I saw the video. And yeah. I'm not putting this Burnett guy down at all. He doesn't look, I don't know, he doesn't look like he could beat his way out of a wet paper bag. But you know, he does not look threatening to me whatsoever. Yeah. So to say that this guy was threatening to him, and I gotta call BS.
And again, like, that's the thing with Burnett, is he has all of the video of the entire encounter. So whatever Higgins is going to try and say, it's not going to work, because it's very, very clear. One of the things that he keeps saying over and over again, there were a couple of people who kept trying to put their hands on him. And over and over, he backs up and he says, please don't put your hands on me. Please don't touch me. Like, he says it probably 5 or 6 times within the context of this whole ordeal, which took probably 15 minutes, because people kept coming over and trying to be combative with him. And he's very chill, completely respectful, just being relatively annoying, like you are, to a member of Congress. And really, it was Clay Higgins who snapped and acted completely inappropriately.
So the question that I have, because again, they're putting their hands on this guy. Now, you know, we live in the stand your ground. We live in the stand your ground era.
Yeah.
DC
is not a stand your ground place. Also, I mean, I don't think that anybody could walk into DC or be on federal property with a handgun or anything.
Okay.
But...
Right. So he felt safe knowing that that was this Clay Higgins, I think, felt safe knowing that no one was going to have a gun. So he then felt like, okay, I think I'm getting the picture here. If this were in Florida or Texas,
yeah,
could this end differently? I'm not advocating. I'm simply asking the question based on the policies that people like Higgins want to ram down our throats and make the law of the land. Am I out of bounds asking if this guy would have the right to stand his ground?
He absolutely would have been able to stand his ground. In the state of Louisiana, where Clay Higgins represents Southern Louisiana, this guy could have shot him. Absolutely.
I mean, because, you know, this is a weird world that we're in.
Yeah.
And again, I think our laws are so screwed up on this. When I was a kid, and I go back to the George Zimmerman thing. When I was a kid and you started a fight and you got beat up, you got beat up and you went home. And if your mother asked what happened to you, you got beat up and you started the fight, she'd beat you up. I mean, that's how society worked. Now it's okay to start a fight, to egg things on, to cause chaos, to cause misery. And then when you get beat up for it, oh, I had to stand my ground. I had to defend. I was feeling threatened. What a weird, screwed up place we are in.
What's funny, too, is this is not the first time that Clay Higgins has had an encounter with somebody. He has a history of violence back in his district before he was a member of Congress.
No.
And that came up in his very first campaign. So, you know, and again, like, this goes back to Greg Gianforte, right, in Montana.
Yeah.
It's the same stuff where members of Congress or, you know, any kind of politician feels so entitled that they have the ability to put their hands on somebody else and to do something violent to them. And I mean, I'm really hoping, I don't know if Jeff is going to take action. I'm really hoping that he does, because my goal and what I've been talking to him about is, like, I want to follow this whole process with you.
Yeah.
Because I want to see how this works out. I want to see what this looks like, because with Jacobs, whenever the Gianforte thing happened, they basically were able to reach an agreement where Gianforte just spent $50,000 and gave it to a pro reporter group thing. Jake Burdett's in school. He's a student. He's an advocate for healthcare.
Am I saying that? Am I hearing you say maybe there's a Harlan Crow somewhere out there, gonna give him, you know, vacations and make all his dreams come true? Is that what I'm hearing?
Man, I would love to see somebody who could maybe help a kid out with a really good lawyer. And honestly, like, there's no shortage of civil rights attorneys in the DC metro area.
No.
And actually a couple of them followed me today and I was like, are you repping this guy?
Yeah,
so
like,
I'm
we want
to see. Right?
Yeah, no, this is one of those cases that gets your name in the paper. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're here with Sarah Burris. Sarah's a reporter at Raw Story, rawstory.com, the website, if you want to take a look at her work, which is fabulous, by the way. I got to get your thought on the charisma ticket. I know that DeSantis has not officially jumped in to the 2024 presidential race, but there's already talk of Sarah Huckabee Sanders being the front runner for the number two. And I'm going to call this the charisma ticket, because I don't think there's an ounce of charisma between the two of them, but I would love to see that.
Oh my God, that would be the gift to television. or not, depending on how you look. But really, yeah, no, they're the most boring people with the least amount of personality that I've ever seen. The thing about DeSantis is, so he did a phone call, I think today, with the with a bunch of his donors, where he said, where he described himself as being in this. So to me, that means you basically have announced that you're running. I don't know if the law makes it that way. I think you have to actually have an amount of money that you've raised. But to me, that means, dude, you're announcing. I think he's going to announce at the end of May, but whatever.
He's going to lose, but okay.
Yeah, and I mean, that's the thing. I don't think he fully understands. Like, has he looked at poll numbers?
Well, I think I think the calculus, honestly, I think the calculus from him and all of them is that I think you're starting to see Republicans coming around and saying, you know, Trump's a loser. Sununu did it first a little bit ago, said he can't win in the general. So I'm seeing more of that popping up, to where I think they think that eventually the Republican Party is just going to get tired of it, base be damned, and just maybe take one election off just to purge themselves of Trump.
Maybe that's it. Maybe they realize that there's no way they're going to win this election and they just throw one. I think that would be the smartest way to go. But I think if they try and paint Donald Trump as the loser, I think he has taken the whole party down with him.
Oh, absolutely.
I think he will destroy them. And I honestly, like, if he is not the nominee, I think that he will start his own party and it will just ultimately destroy the party that way.
I hadn't thought about the third party route.
Yeah.
I got to think about that. I got to think that, you know, he would fight for, you know, look, I'm taking it whether you want me to have it or not kind of thoughts. I don't know.
I think that's possible. I wouldn't be surprised if he did some sort of write-in thing. But the problem is that there are so many states where there is no write-in option. Oklahoma is one of the states where you can't write in somebody.
Right.
So I don't know, like, at that point, like, how do you, if you've gone through the primary and everything, how do you then get on the national ticket unless you're running as a completely different third party?
Well, I mean, they made it to where Republican delegates can't be split. So they actually made it easier for Trump to get through. Yeah. So that's why we play the game. And I'm looking forward to the conventions. We plan on being at both of them. Because I think, again, the fireworks, the entertainment should be well worth it. But Sarah, as always, great stuff. I appreciate the time. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Have an awesome weekend, everybody.
You as well, our good friend Sarah Burris. Make sure you check out the work she does at Raw Story. RawStory.com, the website. We'll get links out on social media. You can take a look at that. Going to take a quick break. Right back with your thoughts. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. That's all.
Phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1972. That was the day that Maggie Kuhn stood before a group of reporters to tell them about her organization, the Gray Panthers. The idea for the group had started 2 years earlier. 65-year-old Maggie had received the unwelcome news that she was going to be forced to retire from her executive position with the United Presbyterian Church. Maggie was not ready to retire. Instead, she started to organize. This was during the era of the Vietnam War protests, and Maggie found allies with young people who also wanted to see changes in society. The original group developed to build connections between young and old. They called themselves the Consultation of Older and Younger Adults for Social Change. Later, they shifted their name to the catchier Gray Panthers. The Panthers adopted the motto, Age and Youth in Action. In 1975, the Panthers held their first national convention in Chicago. 200 Panthers attended, representing
37 states. At the convention, the Panthers adopted a platform of issues. They included issues important to seniors, such as an end to mandatory retirement, better housing for the elderly, and expansions to rent control. But the platform also included other social justice issues, including support for the Equal Rights Amendment, a call for full employment, amnesty for Vietnam draft resistors, and even, after much debate, the legalization of marijuana. In the more than 40 years since their founding, the Gray Panthers have continued to advocate for a variety of issues. One key achievement was a court victory to make Medicare regulations more understandable to seniors, and they were years ahead of the nation by supporting single-payer health care for all.
Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
So interestingly enough, Billy Barr, former Attorney General during the Trump years, Billy Barr is saying that Trump is, how does he put it, very exposed legally if he was playing any games with the classified documents. I keep saying, look, I know a lot of people are saying, no, the documents aren't a big deal. I think those are a big deal. And I know my friend Bob Ney says, no, it's a wash because of Biden and others having documents. It's not the having the documents. It's all of the stuff that they did to hold them. It's not the act that gets you into trouble. It's the cover up, and everyone in D.C. should know that. Someone shoves a microphone in front of your face. Don't lie. If the Bill Clinton thing, I know it's against every man's the fiber of your humanity to say, yeah, that happened. But if you're in that position, they already know it happened. So you can't lie. Dodge the question. Don't answer. You say, get out of here. Leave me alone. Anything. But don't ever lie. And I think that's what Trump's problem is. Again, I'm not a lawyer, but it's the trying to cover it up. It's the, denial. It's the, hey, I did this blanket immunity thing. I signed a document and stuck it under the drawer so no one could find that says I am the emperor of the world. Yeah, that doesn't fly. Not going to fly. Now, like I said, you had Sununu coming out and saying, calling Trump a loser, saying he lost in 2020, he lost in 2022, he lost, he's just lost. Now you're starting to see, some other people, like Sarah said, you had DeSantis saying that, Trump's unelectable in the general, and they keep making this caveat. Yeah, he's going to win the primary, but he's unelectable in the general. You had John Cornyn, the senator from Texas, saying that, the Trump caucus is prominent. And, he said, we need to come up with an alternative. I think President Trump's time has passed. And what's most important is having a candidate who can actually win. And I think you're going to start seeing more of those kind of statements happening to where eventually the Republican Party realizes, hey, he's got primary juice, but he doesn't have general juice. The question becomes, is how much is that going to hurt them at home in their own races? And are they up for election? I do find it kind of funny. You remember Anthony Scaramucci, the Mooch? Evidently, Mooch is backing Chris Christie, which that's kind of funny. And also, I guess they're talking about one of the big billionaires funding Christie as well. So there's part of me that goes, well, Scaramucci knows where the money is. He's like a cash hound dog. You know where the cash is going. And if Chris Christie jumps into the race, there will be a lot of money for him. Because compared to Trump, he's just as bombastic. He's just as combative. But he's not as overly inflammatory. And I think you get a lot of Republicans who will go back. Republicans who voted for Joe Biden will go back to Christie. So for me, and I've said this before, I think Trump has to be taken out at the ballot box. I think he has to stand for election, and I think he has to get defeated in an overwhelming fashion to where it's so big that there's no, they cheated me. They stole from me. It was all rigged. Ain't buying it. So that's kind of where my mind is right now. I think it has to be Trump. But will Republicans be able to save themselves? And again, I think Sarah's right. I think if Trump is the nominee, he takes down the party with them. And if he's not, does he take the party down? So for MAGA world, the question I have for my MAGA friends, if Trump doesn't get the GOP bid, if he doesn't get the nod.
You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay.
WGBW 1590 AM Denmark. W250 CV Green Bay.
And always streaming on the Civic News Media app.